Hello, I'm Dick Jordan, host of the Imagery and Words podcast. Have you ever traveled to a destination you had never visited in the past and come away with a clear sense of the place? In this podcast episode, A Sense of Place, I recount my time at four unique locations in Western North America. Southeast, Alaska's remote panhandle. In his book, The Blue Bear, A True Story of Friendship, Tragedy, and Survival, author Lynn Schooler calls Alaska State Capital, Juneau, more than merely remote, and the rest of Southeast Alaska, a vast unpeopled space. I spent 2 weeks there in 2008 and found it a land empty of men, but full of life. Mountains covered in dense green forests, ice and snow, steeply tumble under gray skies into dark seas fed by calving glaciers. And when the sun does make a cameo appearance, its light falls almost blindingly on the landscape before you. Nearly all of Southeast belongs to the trees, the bears, the birds, the fish, and the marine mammals. A mere 75,000 humans are scattered across 35,000 square miles of the Alaska Panhandle, living in widely dispersed pockets of civilization unconnected to each other by road. They leave their cars at home and travel around the region by private boat, ferry, commercial jet, or puddle jumper propeller-driven aircraft. Treatment of major medical problems often necessitates flying to Anchorage or Seattle. That tiny resident population is dwarfed by nearly a million cruise ship passengers who, like a human tsunami, sweep through the larger towns of Juneau and Ketchikan when they disembark in the morning, while they shop in dockside stores, helicopter to glaciers, or flight sea in floatplanes before streaming back to their ships at day's end to sail away like a band of pirates to conquer yet another port of call. More visitors yet arrive each year by ferry and plane. Most of the people I met who live and work in Southeast Alaska were not born in the 49th state. They came, they saw, and Alaska conquered their souls. Even though I might hate it as a place of permanent domicile, they love it and don't plan to leave it. But should you move there? If you fancy wearing plaid shirts and rubber boots, prefer fishing and hunting to shopping at the mall and attending the opera, and want to live in a world where rainfall is measured in feet rather than inches, and whose primary colors are gray and green, this is the place for you. Southeast Alaska. For most, a great place to visit, but only for a few, a great place to live. California, Sierra Nevada, the Range of Light. In May, snow should be melting, not falling, in California's Sierra Nevada, the Range of Light. That is, unless your weather karma has gone with the wind. Then winter comes roaring back, and the giant green-needled and red-barked trees in Sequoia National Park turn a bright Christmas white. Daytime temperatures hover just above freezing. Slushy paved pathways become like ice-covered rivers in the darkness of the starless, moonless nights. The sun makes a cameo appearance in mid-morning, then is wrapped in a damp blanket of flat gray clouds until, unnoticed, it slips below the western horizon. Visitors from afar, unfamiliar with Mother Nature's fickle meteorological mood swings in these mountains, flee down slope, into the foothills, across California's Great Central Valley, and onward to where the state meets the Pacific Ocean, hoping to find warmth and abundant sunshine. A marmot, sensing no human predators to fear during mid-spring snow showers, ventures out of its burrow and, like a Hollywood movie star, poses contentedly for its Cecil B. DeMille close-up.
Park trails covered in snow dampen the sound of footsteps of those who dress to play for the day in an unexpected winter wonderland. Out of sight, but within earshot, a pileated woodpecker wraps its large beak against a snag, making a sound like a jackhammer pummeling concrete to bits. A day passes. The snow hangs heavily on tree and bush. Then suddenly, as if on cue, the skies clear. The temperature soars to 45 degrees, and in a wild, dripping frenzy, now liquid snow pours off trees, while still frozen white clumps of it remain on the ground where shade delays their final exit from the Earth's stage this year. Spring arrives. Flowers bloom. Waterfalls and rivers rush onward to the sea. All is well in the mountains that separate California from its neighboring state of sin to the east. In May, snow should be melting, not falling, in California's Sierra Nevada, the range of light. That is, unless your weather karma has gone with the wind. Driving the Damned Road in the Canadian Rockies.
Get off the road. Just get off the damned road. That's what the cowboys said I should do. I would have gotten an entirely different perspective on the Canadian Rocky Mountains if I had ditched my rental car, climbed on a horse, and followed him into the backcountry. But if the damned road didn't exist, I would have never met the cowboy. Nor would I have been able to easily reach that section of the mountainous spine that runs north from New Mexico to British Columbia. And I did get out from behind the wheel, now and again, to let my legs take me to where the scenery was even more spectacular than that visible through the windshield. At Jasper, I strolled in solitude around Patricia and Pyramid Lakes, whose blue waters were ringed by trees molting into their fall colors. After descending the steep and narrow trail along the canyon cut into rock by the Moline River, and then huffing and puffing my way back uphill, I spent the afternoon crossing the lake of the same name on a tour boat, heading into parts of the Canadian Rockies frequented only by kayakers and canoeists. My cabin near the Athabasca River was just off the damned road, but yet at the same time, miles away from it. Only the roar of the river cascading over rapids, not that of cars and trucks zooming along the 150-mile route between Jasper and Lake Louise, intruded into my consciousness. South of Jasper, where the icy headwaters of the Athabasca ooze out of the Columbia ice field, you can walk right up to the snout of a glacier. But stepping onto it without an experienced guide, or from one of the immense rubber-tired tour buses that roll across it, is a death wish. So I judiciously elected to stay behind the sign warning visitors to keep off. At Lake Louise, an aquamarine jewel dangling below snow-capped peaks, you can enjoy the traditional afternoon English tea service at the famous Chateau Lake Louise Hotel. But hiking 1,200 plus feet up to the Lake Agnes Tea House will get you a cuppa much farther off the damned road. Banff, the town that serves as the southern gateway to Canada's Rocky Mountain National Parks, you'll find plenty of tourists meandering the streets. Perhaps you'll run into the cowboy there. After all, even he has to drive the damn road from time to time.
Yellowstone, saving the world, park by park. It was a place of such hellish heat and noise and such incomprehensible color tones that at first no sane person believed that it could exist, except perhaps in the imagination of science fiction writers such as Jules Verne, or that of those who churned out penny dreadful novels telling tall tales of the American West. But photographs taken by William Henry Jackson and watercolors made by the artist Thomas Moran during an 1871 expedition to Yellowstone prove that those stories were neither fairy tales nor nightmares. Thus, in 1872, by establishing the world's first national park, Yellowstone, to be set apart as a public park or pleasuring ground for the benefit and enjoyment of the people, the United States Congress acknowledged the undeniable fact that a massive subterranean power had indeed created an explosive display of natural wonders in the territories of Montana and Wyoming. Congress charged the Secretary of the Interior with the duty to adopt rules and regulations that would provide for the preservation from injury or spoliation of all timber, mineral deposits, natural curiosities, or wonders within said park, and their retention in their natural condition. Without Yellowstone, there would be no Acadia, no Big Bend, no Everglades, no Grand Canyon, no Haleakala, no Kenai Fjords, no Lassen, no Mount Rainier, no Redwood, no Sequoia, nor any other places on today's A to Z list of U.S. national parks. Without Yellowstone, there would be no respite from the congestion and clamor of the nation's cities, no refuge on the planet where, as John Muir said, nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine flows into trees. The winds will blow their own freshness into you, and the storms their energy, while cares will drop off like autumn leaves. Documentary filmmaker Ken Burns has called the national parks America's best idea. And by creating Yellowstone National Park, we have exported that best of America's ideas to the rest of the world, and by doing so, have encouraged it to save its own best places. This is travel writer and filmmaker Dick Jordan. Thanks for listening to this episode of my Imagery and Words podcast, which covers books, writing, traveling, and the imagery and art of photography and filmmaking. If you enjoyed A Sense of Place, please consider subscribing to this podcast.